Today is Wednesday, September 24th, 2008. We are in Fargo, Arkansas. This is Julie Wise, and I'm with Nicole Smith Neal, and we are conducting an interview for the Bracero History Project with Mr. Harrison Locke.
How are you, Mr. Locke?
I'm just fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. What I'll do is start with some questions on your personal background.
Go ahead.
And can you tell us when and where you were born?
I was born March the 10th, 1930, in Cotton Plant, Arkansas. Okay.
Where did you grow up? Did you go to school?
In Cotton Plant, Arkansas.
What was the name of the school?
Cotton Plant Vocational High School.
How did you and your family make a living during that time?
Farming.
Did you work on the farm as a child?
From day one up until now.
Okay.
Well, you know, when I got old enough.
Well, do you recall the age that you probably started?
Oh, I grew up on the farm, so I started at a very early age. You know, along with my father doing chores, and so you're just a progression from, I guess, from maybe five or six throughout the high school years.
Okay, who else worked on the farm when you were a child? Did your other siblings?
I have three brothers. I'm the older, and I have three younger than me. 1 year, the next year, and the last year. So we all grew up on the farm, a family farm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of the other families that worked on the farm?
All of us. All of you. Do you want each of the family members' name?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
My father's name, Ab Locke, A-B-B, L-O-C-K-E. And my mother's name, Ruby Locke. And I have three brothers younger than me. The one next to me's name is Jeotha Locke. The one after him named Bailey Locke. And the last one is Ab Jr. Locke. So four boys.
So then at that time your family owned the farm?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And how long had the farm been in the family at that time?
From my grandfather.
From your grandfather, wow.
Great-grandfather, somewhere back up that tree there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm named after my father's father, my grandfather.
Okay.
Yes.
And were there a lot of African-American farm owners here at that time?
Sure it was.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And were there people besides your family working the farm, people you hired or sharecroppers?
Yes, we had, at that time, we had two or three sharecroppers, mm-hmm. and then we had what is called day workers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where did the day workers come from?
One came from Rondo, Arkansas, mm-hmm. and he stayed with us until we got grown. He left and went to St. Louis, and during the same time, one of his friends from Rondo came, and he stayed with us until 5 or 6 years, and I think he got sick and died. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and then we had about three different families lived on the farm, mm-hmm. What we call sharecropper.
Okay. And were there ever any Texas Mexicans on the farm?
No.
Okay. And do you recall when you first heard about the fact that there were Mexicans coming into the area?
No, I just recently, the last few years, you mm-hmm. know, could see them in different places. But
right.
before then, there weren't any in this area.
Oh, okay. So you don't remember?
They were seasonal. They would come in and pick cotton in the fall and then leave.
And do you remember when you first heard about that, Mexicans coming to pick cotton in the fall?
Yeah, that was from the latter part of the 40s and 50s.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why do you think farmers chose to do that? Why do you think farmers chose to bring Mexicans here in the fall?
Because at that time, there was, in my area, wasn't anything but cotton and corn. And there were no machines to harvest the cotton at that time. So they would the plantation owner would send somewhere and get Mexicans to come in and pick cotton and work at the gin. And each family, other than that, more or less provided their own labor.
So you're saying that your family did not employ Mexicans in the fall.
That's right.
But you knew that other people were doing
that. Right. Plantation owners, two or three of them would hire Mexicans to pick cotton.
And was that here in
Cotton Plant?
Here in Cotton Plant.
In all of this area,
right.
That had a lot of cotton.
And do you remember ever meeting any of these Mexicans in the fall?
Not personally. I could just see them.
You see them?
Yeah.
Do you remember if they ever? Well, we'll get to some other questions about that later. Here, I'll pass this on to Nicole. Okay.
Did the farmers provide any special accommodations for any of the?
Yes, they had houses on the farms that they lived in, and a lot of them couldn't. Out of each group, there would be one or two could speak English, but they always had. A lead man that could, communicate
with everybody. Okay.
And so that person would take care of them and do their talking and do the business part of the work. And each plantation that had those Mexican workers would provide a truck or a tractor and a trailer for them to go to the town or do their shopping. They had a house somewhere out there on the farm that these people will live in.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's where they would sleep
and
eat. And then,
that's right.
Okay. Describe the work performed on the farm.
You don't know anything about picking cotton?
Yes, sir.
What other way are you going to describe picking cotton?
Yeah.
What would it do to you? What would it do to your hands and to your back and things like that, working those hours on the farm?
At the time, in a few days, it wouldn't do anything but make them ready.
Make them ready.
Yeah, you get accustomed to it. Your knees and back and hands. After your first two or three days, you'd be all right because there wasn't nothing else.
What was the daily routine on the farm? From
sun to sun.
Sun to sun. And what would be the first thing you do?
You would get up and you would get breakfast, and then you would do the farm chores. That is to milk the cows, feed the chickens, feed the livestock, and go to the field. There you were occupied in the field all day, sun to sun.
Would you catch your lunch? Would you go back to the house for lunch, or you would eat in the
some
field?
Some would go. See, usually the mother or someone would be left at the house to provide the cooking, and then you'd take a sandwich and get a watermelon or something to carry to the field. But you'd have a good meal at night when you got home.
Now, the Mexicans that you did see working, would they perform the same work as other laborers, as you and others out in the field?
Yeah, they would have to pick cotton, yeah.
Now, did you all work alongside each other?
See, they were on plantations. Mm-hmm. Family farms didn't have that.
Right. Interesting.
Family farms operated their own little operation.
What did people on the farm think about the Hispanics that were coming in to work?
I guess nothing, because they weren't confronted with them no kind of way. They were just working for a company, a plantation. So that was someone else's farm, big farm.
So when you mentioned that they would bring them to town on the weekend,
Well, some will be on the weekend, and then some will provide midweek transportation or services for them. Mm-hmm. See, as I mentioned before, that was someone, the leader, could speak English, and he would do the business. And then the plantation owner would provide a truck or a tractor and a trailer for them to go to town and get their, whatever they needed, and go on back to that place and go to work.
Do you remember, did they ever do anything fun? Did they ever go to a bar or have a drink?
Yes,
or?
You know, a Saturday night was
yeah, tell me about Saturday night.
Saturday night was the fun times, you know. That's when they would get dressed and go to town and walk the streets and shop and go to the bar and fight and do everything.
Do you have any specific memories of that?
Well, one incident happened somewhere back there in the forties. A white fella was always kind of meddling some of them, and one of them took care of that. In other words, he got cut fatally. So they broke up that meddling, you know. Sometime back in those days, white people had an act of meddling certain people. But see, sometimes they would get broke of that habit.
Define what you mean by meddling here.
Picking at, you know, making fun.
Interesting. So you remember an incident in the 40s, and you're saying a white guy was kind of...
Yeah, he was known for disturbing the peace, meddling with people.
Got it.
And so... They killed that.
The Mexicans killed him? Wow.
Yeah.
What happened to those Mexicans as a result?
I guess the whole company of them left.
Oh, they left?
Yeah.
Did they end up in jail at all? Or?
I don't think so.
Okay. Any other incidents or images
that's
come to
mind? That's a particular one. I mean, there was plenty of incidents. But see, we were kind of isolated from that. That happened uptown. Mm-hmm. See, we had a portion of town that we... always gathered and enjoyed and catered. And see, they were not allowed to mingle with us, although they were migrant workers, but they could go into the white restaurants and establishment, but we couldn't. So, you know, they was a notch or two above us.
Let me ask a quick question here. So you're saying that they were always allowed into the white places?
Yeah, they weren't discriminated against like we were.
Like you were. Did they ever come to the black areas or no?
Yeah, well, then the police would assist them out.
How do you mean assist them out?
If they were in our restaurants, they'd come in and get them. You're not supposed to be in.
Really? So the police would take them out of the black restaurant?
Yes.
But you saw that some of them wanted to come to the black restaurant?
Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
They felt more comfortable, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
How would people treat them in the black restaurants?
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course, they didn't speak English, most of them, right?
Well, very few could speak English. Yeah.
So how would you communicate?
Through the leader.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
And so you're saying the police would take them out of the black and send them over to the white.
Right.
Did they ever try to date these Mexican men? No.
That would work.
So you never saw them trying to approach a black woman or a white woman?
No.
Okay. Do you think they were finding companionship other ways? Do you think there were maybe prostitutes or anything like that?
I imagine so.
Yeah.
You know, wherever a lot of people are.
Sure.
They'll find a way.
Did you know any of them by name?
No.
No, okay. And do you... Here, let me pass this to Nicole. Okay. Or anything else that you think about.
Okay. And so it was a good relationship with the Mexicans.
Yeah.
Can you recall any problems? Any problems with this?
No other problems.
Okay. What were the major problems that farmhands and workers would deal with just on the land or just being in this area?
See, they were just migrating. They didn't last. After the cotton was harvested, they would leave and go back to Mexico or somewhere.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me about these, let's go back to these fighting incidents. Mm-hmm. You've answered with the Hispanics, were the African Americans meddled?
No.
At all?
No.
Okay. Were they?
They were friendly, uh-huh. You know. But see, we just had some young hothead, a white boy, would call himself picking fun at them, messing around with them, and so that ended kind of quickly.
Okay, with the hardheads bother.
Hotheads.
Yeah. Would they meddle the African Americans?
At times, yeah.
At times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did they ever complain, like, of living conditions or wages or food?
No. I guess all that was understood before they got here. Yeah.
Okay. So it's been said that in some areas, Mexicans were earning more money than African Americans for the same cotton. Does that ring any bells around here?
I don't know about that. See, most of the time, each family would provide their own labor. Mm-hmm. And the immediate family members would work, and there were no wages involved.
Right.
But now your hired help, you'd have to pay them. And at that time, there wasn't no such thing as a dollar an hour and all that. Huh. You might get maybe $4 or $5 a week. I remember in the 50s, after I finished high school, we had a young fellow that lived with my parents, and he stayed with them until I finished college. And my father was paying him $25 a week, standard, just $25 a week. And he was making good money.
So no matter how much he picked, it was the same $25?
Well, see, he wasn't picking all the time. After the picking season, it was something else you would have to do. So he was just a deyhand, what we call it. He lived in the house, and he didn't have to buy no grocery or anything. He was, in other words, he was just another member of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he stayed right there until I graduated from college. Yeah, during that time, machinery was just beginning to come in. In 1950, that's the year I finished high school. And that fall, I went to college. And I stayed there until 55. And I graduated with a BSE degree in vocational agriculture. After graduation, I taught 1 year in Marvel, Arkansas, a veterans class. That was right after World War II. You don't know anybody, but veterans came home from the Army, wanted to farm. The vocational department of each high school had an agriculture department. And they would come to a class 1 or 2 days a week. And a VOAG teacher would teach them about different crops and farming methods and so forth. And then all the rest of the week, they'd go back home and do some of this stuff. So after that year, that was in 56, I worked 1 year in Marvel. Then the class got small. They transferred it to Forest City. There's a few more veterans there. So we took the class from Marvel and carried it to Forest City. And I was still a teacher. That lasted 1 year. And at that time, they had 3 or 4 vocational agriculture teachers in that department at that time. One of those teachers was becoming a principal. So that left a vacancy in there. I was already there. And the class was getting small, and he said, "You already here, or would like to move up in this position?" I said, "I'll try it." Mm-hmm. So I taught VOAG to veterans, institutional on-farm training, 1 year in Forest City. And then from that to all-day vocational ag teacher for four or five years. Quit teaching, went back home to this farm, and started farming again.
Mm-hmm. And what year was that?
In 62.
62,
yeah.
Okay.
I started teaching in 56 and quit in 62.
So when you came back in 62, was there still Mexican workers here?
Each fall. Well, see, by that time, mechanical pickers was coming in. So you all don't know nothing about that. You weren't here then. It used to be you had to pick all the cotton with hand, by hand. So in the 50s and 60s, that's when the machines started picking the cotton. So that eliminated the migrant cotton pickers.
Got it.
So each farm, plantation would buy a cotton picker. Mm. I remember the first cotton picker. One rule. You could farm with the tractor all year in the fall, some kind of way, you could turn it around and put it on a machine, and that same tractor would pick cotton. When you get through picking cotton, you turn it back around to farm the next year. Okay, when they first came out, they were one row cotton pickers. And as time progressed, they came up with a two row cotton picker. And later on, they come up with the four-row cotton picker, and now they have six-row cotton pickers. And there's no telling how much cotton, if it's out there, they can pick. But someone has to have enough knowledge to operate that thing. So therefore, they're still in need for education, because you got to read the manual, you got to know how to check the oil. You got to know when something go wrong, and you get in most cases you're gonna have to fix it. Yeah. So the machine age from I would say about the mid 50s on through, that's when all these combines and cotton pickers started, getting numerous.
So how do you think mechanization changed this area?
It eliminated all this. Fingers and back and knee hurting. But at the same time, you see, you could shift your thought to something else. There used to be, when there wasn't nothing else for us, cotton picking contests. People from here would go all the way up to Mississippi County, up in Blytheville and Osceola. That was one of the richest cotton farming areas in the world, I guess. But they would leave here and go up there and pick cotton. A lot of people could pick 500, 600, 700 pounds of cotton per day. And they would go up there, because cotton up there would grow up to your shoulders, And if you was a good skilled cotton picker, you could pick a whole lot of cotton, because you didn't have anything else to worry about. So you would hone that, you would hone that skill. Mm-hmm. See, now you couldn't pick no cotton now.
No way.
There was nothing like this. We had a radio and it ran by a battery. So a lot of times there was no electricity. There were no air conditions. There were no hot and cold water in the house. There was no bathroom in the house. Before education was starting to get becoming important, you didn't have no need to learn how to learn no multiplication table. You don't know nothing about no noun and pronoun. What are you talking about? How are you going to use that out there in the field? You don't know about no typewriter. Slide rule. It was amazing to go to town and see the clerks in the store working by. You see, you didn't have no buggies then to go and shop. You go in the store and tell the clerk what you wanted. And you just stand there and wait, and they bring it, and, you know. There wasn't no shopping, no buggies to go around to shop and pick this off. You couldn't go behind the counter. And what good would it do you to know how to figure all that stuff you got, you know? Because when they get through, they're going to add it up. If most of the time it's on credit. Maybe they will give you a slip and tell you, you know, how much it was and something. It probably wouldn't. It's put on your account. That's how come some people never could get out of debt. Because mm-hmm. they didn't ever know what they owed.
And were people leaving this area for the North or Memphis at that time?
All of these communities were full of people.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
But were people leaving also for Chicago or no?
Yeah, they started then, you know, mm-hmm. right after World War II. Yeah.
And do you think that, for example, the day wage laborers that you were discussing, do you think that they were affected by the presence of the Mexicans, that maybe there was less work for them? No. Mm-mm. You feel like there was enough work for everybody?
It was enough for everybody.
Wow. Okay. Yes. And let me just ask you one more question. You mentioned that that Mexicans at that time were allowed to go onto the white side.
Yes.
And that they were kind of like a step above African Americans. Right. Why do you think that was?
Because we couldn't go over there.
Right. But I mean, why do you think they let them go over there?
Segregation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why.
Right.
You know what that means?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, actually, why don't you tell me what it meant then?
It meant if you were white, you had privileges. Mm-hmm. And if you were black, you didn't have no privileges.
So do you think it ever occurred to anyone that Mexicans were not white? Or they just all assumed?
Well, look, they weren't black.
That's true.
All right.
Yeah.
It sounds funny now, doesn't it? You know. But, you know, hey. You couldn't go into our restaurant. The police would come get you out.
Really? Why do you think that was?
Segregation.
Yeah. But why do you think they cared if a white person went onto the black side?
Ignorance. That, you know, to sum it up in a nutshell, ignorance. That's all it was. See, we had to go to school 2 months in the summer. Our school didn't start in September. We went back to school in November or after. So we didn't have no air conditioning, no fan, no cold water. We had to go to school July and August, 2 months. And the other 7 months was from when we started in December on back around to May.
Mm-hmm. And when did that start to change?
After the machines came in and the people didn't have to pick cotton like they do, like they used to.
Sure.
See, our school used to didn't start in September, but the white school started in September. Mm-hmm. See, they didn't have to pick cotton.
Mm-hmm. Whites did not pick cotton.
Few isolated kids. No.
Yeah, not really. So there weren't white sharecropper families?
Or... There was few, but still, they didn't have to do what we had to do.
Did you have any other questions, Nicole?
Well, I'm interested in the mechanization.
Yes.
Do you feel that mechanization pushed African Americans to northern cities, or do you think it was kind of like the fact that they left and went to northern cities is why mechanization kind of had
to be alive? Well, yeah, see, look, mechanization came in because a lot of the people that they used to have to pick this cotton and stuff, after they got out of high school, they left. Went to North or somewhere else. And I remember when I was in college, one of my friends, roommate, after school was out in May, he went to Flint, Michigan and worked in an automobile factory. Came back in the fall with plenty of money. See, at that time, we thought a dollar per hour was big money. So that's what they were getting, a dollar an hour in the 50s. in the factories, in General Motors, and Ford, and so forth. So, all right, now when this guy come back and tell us, you know, one couldn't go, well, some kind of way we're going to find a way to get there. So, and, you know, on and on. And each year, it'll be more leaving the campus, going to Flint, Detroit, Chicago, or somewhere. We wouldn't go back to that plantation.
So the plantations almost had to.
They had to, yeah. They had, see, they had to go shift to mechanization. Because, see, the Mexicans stopped coming in. But, see, after the plantation owners would buy three or four of those big two-row cotton pickers, they didn't need them. See, some of the plantations had over thousands of acres of cotton gin, granaries, and a few, you know, they hired a few people, those that had mechanical skills. You could get a job, but there wasn't no dollar per hour. Okay, you see, and then the teachers, after they, you know, the student go to college and get the education, come back and start teaching, they would teach youngsters, you know, just like you all. See, you, some of this stuff you had never heard about. See, you know, and then, you know, you got to learn how to type. You got to learn how to use the ad machine. You know, it's a change. You got to learn something. See, you got to learn about that verb and noun and so forth. You got to learn all about that, see, because your speech would become different. See, you could say words, you know how to pronounce words. But before that, you know, you could say, you know, people, dialects and stuff, you could understand. You know, you had to be out there among them to understand some of that talk. And but after, you know, after going to school and learning, see, we got in high school, you'd have your classes. I got in some of these classes where the teacher had been to college and had, you know, degrees and all. We would go to the pump and pump a bucket of water and bring it and sit on the shelf. Well, no refrigerator, well, no ice. And then there'd be a dipper there. See, we didn't know a dipper was supposed to be a dipper to dip the water and pour it in a glass. And everybody drank from the dipper. See, you know, and then you learn about hygiene, you know. See, a lot of youngsters didn't own a toothbrush. You know what? You see, until you grow into some of these things, you don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that you weren't supposed to drink out the dipper until I, you know, took a course in hygiene and health. Take a bath every night. See, sometimes country people will take a bath maybe Friday night or Saturday. Wear the same thing the whole week until they fall off you, you know. Didn't have nothing else.
That's the way it was.
Yeah. You see, look, when everybody's out there in the field, hot and sweating and all, you don't know who's smelling. We're all out there.
You can't point the finger at anybody.
No. The same thing you got on the day you had it on yesterday.
Thought you had it on tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And you weren't going to get no bath until maybe Saturday, Friday or Saturday. All the week. You know, now look, if you don't know, you're not exposed to anything, how are you going to know anything? If you hadn't gone to school, you wouldn't know how to operate this stuff. But you, hey, you could... If you had grown up in those times, you know how to pick cotton and chop cotton. Yeah. You'd be an expert at that. Yeah. Come on, what's the more question?
Gotten most of my questions answered. How about you?
Mine too. I do have another question for you. Were schools built? Like the schools where you who established those schools? Was it the community? The community. See,
at first, each church had a school. Each country church had a little school. That's where you begin your schooling, at a church.
A public church. School at the church.
Okay. And then later on, they built public schools. And you've heard, maybe you too young to know anything, but you heard about the Rosenwald School?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, then they came up. But you see, by that time, you had men going to Tuskegee and UAP, AMN, and AS. You don't know, wasn't the way.
No, not at that time.
No.
Where? You're saying that
he was about to say ASU,
but not at that time.
No,
okay. You go to Pine Bluff.
We go Pine Bluff and Tuskegee, and each state had a school. You know, yeah. And then you know, they would come back and get jobs and start teaching. You know, teaching. Yeah. Yeah, mathematics, everything, you know, teaching. See, I don't know about now, because I quit teaching in 62. But when you got a degree in agriculture, you was one of the top persons in the community. The ag teacher was over the principal in these high schools. And most of the ag teachers were principals. So then they started teaching the boys. Girls took home economics, and boys took vocational agriculture. They teach about the poultry, you know, chickens and cows and hogs. I know older people didn't get that kind of training. They didn't know. My father-in-law bought he had a little farm, and he had a little herd of cattle, and he called himself buying a Aberdeen Angus bull, a black Angus, and somebody sold him a black bull, but he had horns that long. And he took me out in his pasture to show me his cow and his bull. He just bought this bull, and he was happy. And he said, "Come on out here, look at this bull." I went out in the lot, and that's then this big old bull looked like a mule with horns this long. I said, why is your bull? You told me you had an Angus bull. He said, that ain't you. I said, mister, there's not an Angus bull in the world with horns.
What?
I said, there's not a one in the world. I've had some training. He didn't have no training. Somebody sold him a bull, and he didn't know. There's not an Angus in the world with horns.
Now, for the industrial high schools, was this the high school for the area, or was there another industrial
high school? Oh, yeah, this was a special school. This year, see, a lot of these areas didn't have high school. Mm-hmm. They go up to about 7th or 8th grade, and after that, you had to go to Little Rock or somewhere else with some of your people to go to high school. Mm-hmm. Most of at that time, you could finish about the 8th grade and take some kind of little test and start teaching.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
But you had to have a degree to teach VOAG and home economics. You couldn't sub or nothing. You couldn't. How are you going to teach somebody about vocational agriculture and you don't know nothing about it? You don't know a Plymouth Rock from a White Dagger, you know, chicken. You know, you just got to do some studying. You can't learn that. Although I grew up on the farm, we had chicken and all, but I didn't know the different breeds of chicken. There's a breed that's supposed to lay eggs, and you're not supposed to eat them. You don't eat no white legger. That's all they do, lay eggs. But they got dual purpose, you know, a breed that lay a lot of eggs and got some good meat. And then they got just the regular meat type. Just like you go down to Kroger and Tyson, you know, all them, they don't fool with no white legging for no meat. You can get your eggs from them. Yeah, so just like the livestock, you got cows, but you got a dairy cow, that's the one you milk to get your milk. And then you got beef cows, that's the one you sell for the beef. But see, you got to know. You just don't. It's just another world, you know. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to know cotton from corn, from soybeans. You know, you don't know it until somebody teach you. You be exposed to it. Mm-hmm. See, just like now, me, you, either one. We can't drive no jet airplane, no 747, can we? But they in the air, aren't they? Somebody driving them. But we can't do it. Okay. You got to be trained. Mm-hmm. And the biggest part, you know, I enjoy teaching because in agriculture, see, they made fun of most of the time ag students. But see, we knew more than all the rest of them. Yeah. We had to take in college. You have to take everything that you take plus the egg. See, I had to have 230 hours to get out of college. And English and physical ed, all of them, maybe 180 hours. You know, you could graduate. But you had to have at least 230 hours.
Where were you in college?
Yeah, how do you think I was going to teach school?
No, I said, where were you in college?
AM&N, UAPB.
Ah, okay.
Just like she said, we couldn't go to ASU.
So that was down in Pine Bluff.
Yeah. I after my first year, I couldn't go to Flint, you know, to the automobile. So I stayed on the campus. I worked on the campus. After my first year, I worked my way through college. I had a job on the campus. I was pasteurizing and homogenizing milk. I was cutting up pork and beef, you know, those cuts. Mm-hmm. We had a big walk-in freezer. On Saturdays, we'd slaughter and butcher pork. We had poultry on college farm. We had poultry, eggs, mm-hmm. different kind of chickens. So it was plenty of work on the campus. But see, they wasn't paying you no money. They would put your credit in the business office. So when school started this fall, whenever you enrolled, you wouldn't have to pay no money, but you got credit. And see, you know, it was so much time that you had in college. I didn't know college was like it was until I got there. See, after your first year, sometimes you have maybe one class a day. There'll be one or two days in the week, you may not have two classes. Then one or two days, you may have four or five classes. So, you know, you could arrange your schedule after your first year so you could work in the evening. You'd have all your classes in the morning. And you could work all the evening. And then you could make a little extra money doing things, you know. Yeah. So I had it made when I was in college after my first year. See, we had livestock. We had a herd of cattle. I didn't know until I took OAG in high school from 9th through 12th. We had a good OAG teacher, and he taught us all that stuff. So we had some white-faced Herefords. We had about 7,500 head. Okay. And my father told me when I got a senior, from the graduate from high school, he said, go out there and get you four or five of them steers, load them up in the truck and take it to Memphis, you got your money. I said, so I had my first year, I had my money in my pocket before school was out. Wow. See, we had you know, that was, oh, that was in the, you know, in the 50s. See, I finished high school in the 50s. So that fall, I went to Pine Bluff. I had my money. I had it before I finished high school. And during my teaching career, I got a chance to go to China. Dr. Berger from ASU, he was the Dean of Agriculture at ASU, invited me and 18 other people to go to China. So
when was that?
Huh?
When was that?
That was, I don't know, after, somewhere in the 60s. I think it was after I quit teaching. But in a way, he knew me. And I was the only black in that bunch. I went to China. And a few years after that, I got a chance to go to Africa. I've been to Mali. Yeah. So I've done pretty good. Yeah. So I think my education served me well.
Yeah.
Because see, I can just walk out there. I just know, you know, different things. I know about trees. I took botany, horticulture. I just know. I worked out here. After I quit teaching, I worked out here on this farm right here. Yep. And I was asking you, did you know Dr. Tina Teague? She's a professor up there. She came down here and I worked with her. She came down here to help us do some vegetables out here. I don't know if she's still there or not. Do you ever go?
She may be there. I'm in the humanities department, so we could be on the same campus, and that campus has grown so to the point that you hardly run into people unless you're intentionally looking for them.
Yeah, I used to go up there, go out to the farm right there, across, and they got a little plot between the railroad.
Not anymore.
Huh? They don't have that plot between the railroad before you go on the campus.
Oh, you're well. Actually, you're right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
It's a between nice little chunk of land between
all out there.
Right before you get to the
he's
right.
And then you go through the campus, go around, going on to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been all out there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the part that I wait for the railroad. Wait for the trains.
You're stuck there.
Yeah, that little part right
When I was in high school in Voag, we used to go up there to do livestock judging.
Okay.
After that farm. Mm-hmm. They got, at that time, they had dairy cows and beef cows.
Mm-hmm. And we call that the equestrian stables and everything
You know what the equestrian means?
Well, the horses or something.
Yeah.
Well,
see, wasn't the horses there then, as I knew of. Bovine.
Horses?
No.
Cow.
Horse girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, swine. Equine. Okay.
I don't have any other questions.
Yeah, okay. That's this has been actually extremely helpful.
Yes.
This has been extremely helpful. I appreciate it.
All right. Well,
so much.
Coming out.
Just in time for lunch.
No.